Hello, everyone. Holy shit, right? Not the appropriate response to the day. Woke up, found out Pete Carroll's the new head coach. Sounds like he's going to be the president, too, so he's going to be the man in charge of most of the personnel decisions. It's a lot. It's a lot of responsibility for someone who's been out of the NFL for a very long time, who has built his success off of turning his school into the ultimate destination for future NFL players. Who hasn't really had to do what an NFL coach must do, which is work with limitations for a very long time, and was only marginally successful when he did. But that doesn't mean he'll fail. It just means that, that he might fail. And so my response to Pete Carroll is that he seems like a nice guy. I like that he's open. His age doesn't concern me a terrible lot just because he seems to be open to new ideas, open to changing his philosophies. He seems hungry. I like that. Without burying this in a cliche, age is to some extent a state of mind. Obviously, not in a cellular level, but if Carroll wants to be the best, accepts that his first run in the NFL was not terribly successful, even if it wasn't the disaster it's sometimes characterized as, and is open to doing whatever it takes to become successful again, and is not light, breezy, and easy, and just waiting for success to find him, as he could potentially be interpreted at USC, then he has a chance. Seattle has made a major financial commitment to Carroll. And so this is a real turning point in the franchise, and I can't say that I'm optimistic. Carroll is the ultimate retread. He's been a coach for a very long time. He has a style, and we know what kind of coach he is. He's not going to be the kind of leader that's going to take the team in a new direction. 10 years from now, when this team is probably really fully and completely fresh from the disaster that it has wrought, Carroll's going to be, he's going to be pushing 70, and it's unlikely to even think that he will be the coach then. This is not hiring someone who can shepherd the franchise into what it will become. This is really almost like a diversionary tactic, and I don't understand why it's being done exactly. It seems like maybe it's being done because it kind of worked when we did this with Mike Holmgren, and we're hoping that Carroll will be able to do the same thing. Unfortunately, Carroll doesn't have the record of Holmgren. He's not a proven NFL mastermind. He's not, even in his most successful days at USC, he's rarely ever credited for actual on-field strategy. He's known as a great recruiter, and that skill is going to be, at the very least, greatly reduced in the NFL. The NFL franchises work with finite resources. They can't invite hundreds and hundreds of potential NFL prospects and see who shakes out. I mean, that's obviously going to be a winning formula on the college level, but it's not going to work in the NFL. And when you're hiring someone for a run of success at a level, I mean, that is why Carroll is even being considered. He's going to be paid $7 million a year over 5 years. So he's being treated like a hotshot, can't miss coaching prospect that Seattle's really locking in, that they are tying their future to, and his greatest ability is being stripped from him now. And I'm really left questioning the motivation of this move. I want to give Carroll the benefit of the doubt, but that's where I was 2 years ago talking about Mora, in a very similar set of circumstances where we're talking about a guy who was not a very successful NFL coach that we were hoping would turn into something new when he became a Seahawk, and it just didn't happen. As discouraging it is to say, Mora is probably more prepared to be an NFL head coach than Pete Carroll is. He's not going to be bringing Snoop Dogg down to the Seahawks practice. This isn't his chance to do what he did in USC. you know, in the professional level. There's just no way to translate one to the other. And so, you know, shit. I don't know what else to say. You know, it's one of those moments where when you begin to really take in the full potential enormity of the move and how much it could really cripple this franchise for the next at least 5 years, it's incredibly discouraging. There's very little silver lining to find. So, you know, that's that, you know, and we're just going to have to hope that Carroll is able to discover something within himself, or blunder into something, or just maybe be barely competent enough to make it. But I don't see any evidence that is true. You know, but before I you know, bury this too deep into the sand, let me just say that, you know, we shouldn't judge Carroll by the success or failure of other college coaches. You know, Jimmy Johnson was once a college coach. It's not like there's some sort of innate thing about a college coach that makes it so they cannot be a successful professional coach. One of the major reasons that college coaches have not done well is that the move to hire a prominent college coach is often done by franchises that are desperate, and the expectation is that coach will be able to do what they did in college in the pros. And so someone like Steve Spurrier was expected to, you know, resurrect the Washington Redskins, and that was just never going to happen. Things are slower. It's a glacial pace in the NFL. You have to build up. Every team is starting from a position of reasonable parity, and because of that, you can't make sudden changes for the most part, because, you know, and speaking of Jimmy Johnson, one of the reasons he was able to be so successful is that owner Jerry Jones worked in a time when he could throw around money and there was no existent salary cap. And nowadays, the path to success is building a foundation and allowing it to mature together. There's no way to just buy your way into a successful franchise. And so, while I don't think Carroll should be judged by the failures of other college coaches, I think that he will fail if the same expectations that were put on those coaches are put on Carroll, and people really think that this franchise is going to be able to turn around quickly. You know, it is possible that the franchise could be back in contention in a couple of years, but, you know, with the right moves, the right moves that I suddenly feel very discouraged are actually going to happen. You know, this whole situation seems like Seattle has taken a gigantic step backwards. I mean, and it's really frustrating too, because it's they're essentially repeating the same mistakes. You know, what they did with Holmgren was they gave him absolute power, and, you know, and though he was a great professional coach, something Carroll never was, you know, he couldn't do everything, and like a lot of people, because he wasn't checked, he was able to indulge in his own weaknesses, you know, without someone being able to tell him that this is an improper move. You know, he was being asked to contribute, you know, throughout the organization, you know, at things that he really had no experience at. You know, he is not an executive. He doesn't have experience as an executive. The role of coach and the role of general manager or president are just, they're completely different duties. And one shouldn't expect someone who would be good at one to be good at another. I mean, Carroll might be a good coach. You know, he seems to, I described him as the ultimate player's coach, and I really think he is. I mean, he acts like he's a player. In a lot of ways, that makes him like more. You know, he likes to run around. He likes to goof around with the guys, which I think is fine, but you have to be consistent with that. I think that's one way that Carroll will succeed where Mora didn't, is Mora seemed like he didn't know which way to turn. And half the times he wanted to be, you know, a player's coach where he was hanging out with the guys, and half the times he wanted to be a hard ass where he was, you know, throwing down and telling people what's what, and, you know, things are going to change around here. And it ended up making a very tumultuous and chaotic setting, and, you know, and it didn't help the Seahawks, certainly. And I don't think Carroll will, if he gets if he suffers failure, initial failure, and he probably will. I mean, the Seahawks are not going to rebound, though the move to a 3-4 could dramatically help their defense. But nevertheless, they're probably not going to rebound into a playoff contender overnight. So he's going to have to deal with failure, have to deal with adversity. I don't see Carroll turning on his players like Moore did. And that's, if nothing else, encouraging. I think the players will play for Carroll. You know, that's a pretty minimum standard for a coach. But nevertheless, you know, it's new. It's fresh. It's something that we can say is an improvement that we can feel fairly confident Carroll will bring. But the idea of really going out and working the angles and the strategy of managing a roster and knowing undervalued commodities and being able to look at a market is really much more of a businessman's job. And though Carroll, you know, long ago, I believe, got his degree in business administration, he hasn't worked as an executive. You know, he is going into fresh territory without a lot of experience and might get eaten alive. I hope not, but it's difficult to see otherwise. You know, and it sounds like along with Carroll, we're going to be getting Pat Kirwan. You know, here's the thing about Pat Kirwan. Right off, we can say here's a guy who has great connections throughout the NFL, and that's important. You know, I think that can be overvalued because, you know, we all have phones, right? I mean, any person could call another executive, and if they can work out the deal gets done. You know, the assumption that an executive must be perfectly interconnected with the rest of the league seems kind of preposterous. It's a market. You know, Seattle has resources. Other teams have needs. They're not going to just scoff at someone because they don't know their, you know, they didn't attend their daughter's bar mitzvah or something like that. You know, it's a little silly. It seems almost like creating a criteria that isn't necessary, that almost becomes self-fulfilling. You know, once a person's within that position, they can create those connections. I mean, I imagine there's going to be a certain amount of professional respect as long as everyone treats everyone with professional respect. Nevertheless, Kirwan does seem, he's been in the league forever, which I don't like. He played professionally, I think, in 1972. So, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's old school NFL. You know, this is, I mean, that's dating back to almost the merger. Any thought that this guy is going to come in and radically influence a team seems extremely unlikely. You know, I think he's going to be a caretaker. It sounds like he's getting the position to some extent because he's best friends with Pete Carroll, which is just sickening because that just means that, you know, exactly what happened under Holmgren when he was in that position, where, you know, it was cronyism and favoritism and an inability to see things in strict business terms, in terms of efficiency and productivity, and instead see things in terms of human relations, you know, and that was Holmgren's failing. And Carroll cannot afford to have that kind of failing because he can't, you know, he can't bring in a franchise quarterback that he happened to have on his former team's practice squad. He's not a guru of any type of system. Carroll was never known to be particularly great as, you know, at what we think of as the fundamentals of coaching, decision making, you know, strategy, roster construction, you know, and he wasn't even a highly desired coach before he went to USC. You know, it was just a really great marriage of personality and timing, where USC at that point was a franchise that was not considered an honored franchise, but nevertheless had some things that were going for it. You know, it's in a city that has no NFL franchise, and so once Carroll was able to bring his charisma and his high profile to it and his very breezy style, then all of a sudden talent started flooding in. But again, this is not something that's going to happen in Seattle. You know, Seattle is an NFL franchise limited by the rules of the NFL, and if you want to make your team high profile, you do it through winning. You don't raise the profile to increase the talent to cause winning. You win, and then people want to join you. And Seattle's a long way from winning. You know, it's frustrating because in another way, this feels like it puts a real ratchet in what I was hoping for from this offseason, because I think Seattle's going to probably I think they're going to be conservative now. I think they're going to fail to take advantage of some great opportunities they have. You know, they can, if they do it right, rebuild this team into a solid team quickly. And part of that is that the NFC West, while some people seem to complain about it being a weak division, it really benefits a team that could be smart about it, because getting into the playoffs is everything, really. You know, once you get into that short single elimination tournament, well, it's you know, unlikely that an inferior team will win on the road. It's not impossible, and really getting into the playoffs is the key to eventually winning a Super Bowl. You know, you just want to increase your opportunities of getting into the playoffs. You know, the Arizona Cardinals, a completely undeserving team, a barely above mediocre team last year, nearly won the Super Bowl, more or less just because they were good at the right time, and at that point, it doesn't matter what they did. It doesn't matter the total quality of the team. It just mattered that they could win during the single elimination tournament process. And so Seattle really can't. I mean, they, like Arizona, they really only need to be an above-average team to enter into the playoffs. And then, you know, you get that chance to see what happens, to have the right kind of team health at the right time, you know, to maybe be facing teams that were great a month and a half ago, or maybe have better overall talent, but for whatever reason are inferior right then, or just you win on the matchups. And it's frustrating because now I don't know if that's even possible. You know, this big splashy move that doesn't really do much other than raise the profile of the team, I think is going to drag it down. I think that, unfortunately, what we're really looking at is this team is going to have to really sink to a rock bottom that I did not anticipate before so it goes in a new direction. And that sucks, because it's not necessary. Seattle has huge advantages. It has the richest owner in the league. It has the richest sports team owner, I think, of any sports team owner. You know, Paul Allen, up till some of his investments started going sour, was one of the richest men in the entire world, you know. And he still has something like $15 billion more dollars than any other NFL owner. And while, you know, there's a salary cap, there is the salary cap, and then there's the, you know, real money that's spent by a team. And Seattle's always been in the top, top five, top ten of that. And they have that advantage. They can work within the rules of the salary cap, in a way that poorer franchises can't. Cincinnati can't do this. Buffalo can't do this. Furthermore, Seattle has a very invested fan base that is pretty well off. I mean, Seattle's a pretty rich city. It's, you know, I make the comparison a lot to other people, but it reminds me of Boston. It's not a really large city, but nevertheless, it's world class because of the industries that are there, the level of education of the people who live there, the overall quality and class and inherent value of the city, as far from a culture, arts perspective, technology perspective, infrastructure. You know, for those of us living in the Portland area, you know, we can tell you just how valuable basic infrastructure is. I mean, Portland regularly has potholes the size of a man. You know, I mean, it's an ugly city. It has an archaic, an arcane tax code that scares off businesses. And, you know, and while in a lot of ways, demographic ways, Portland and Seattle are similar cities, Portland is not a world-class city, and Seattle is. It's a rich city. It's the kind of city that could hold an NFL franchise and a successful NFL franchise. And, you know, it just has to make the right decisions, and it looks like it just made a preposterously stupid one. But, you know, in the hope that maybe someone's listening out there and that somehow, some way, against odds, this could turn out okay, I'm going to propose an idea of how to get this team off the schneid, so to speak, from being a loser to being respectable to having a bright future. And it's about playing this very playing a game that's going to be possible this year, that is going to be kind of an abnormal year. It looks like the collective bargaining agreement's not going to be renewed. There's not only no indication that it's going to be renewed, but it sounds like the sides are pretty far off. That means there's going to be very few free agents. But teams are going to still have needs. Some teams are going to be in contention. Their window is going to be open. But they're going to need talent, and they're not going to be able to get that talent through free agency like they would otherwise want. In fact, most playoff teams are going to consider this year unsuccessful because they will not win the Super Bowl. Teams like the Saints and Cowboys, the Eagles, the Patriots, the Chargers, you know, while one of them will win, most of them will not. They will consider their window open, and they'll want to make their team better, but this year will ultimately be determined a failure. A team like Seattle that's, you know, a long ways away from contention, that has a good young core, but has a rotting foundation, should start looking at the kind of players that they can move out, because this is going to be an epic season of trading. Now, I don't know if necessarily it's going to be extremely busy, because, you know, there's an inertia to the way things have always been done, and I don't know that we'll necessarily a ton of trades. But I do think we'll see more trading, and trading of superior players than we typically see. And Seattle's got some talents that they can move out, and they should, because while these are good players, and while these players are almost certainly going to be better than the player that they would that would replace them next year, Seattle needs to stop having that next year mindset. It needs to look at this as a project. You know, it's a blunder to look at something and see the very best possible outcome, and to consistently bank on that being what's going to happen. Because what you do is that you're mortgaging the future for something that's not likely to happen. And that's really what Seattle's done the last 2 years. I mean, you know, signing TJ Houshmandzadeh was not a bad move by any means. But signing TJ Houshmandzadeh and not, you know, investing in other ways in the offense is, because all of a sudden you've got this finishing player on an offense that's 15 pieces away. You know, it doesn't make any sense anymore. And that's why Houshmandzadeh is a really good candidate for someone that the team could move. Hush's value is the highest that it'll be, but Seattle doesn't get to control its own market. It doesn't get to control the set of circumstances it's going to work within. You know, the same thing might be said of Marcus Trufant or Deion Branch or even Nate Burleson, but nevertheless, you know, Seattle doesn't have a need for these guys going into next year. You know, accepting that next year is almost certainly not going to end in contention is simply healthy. And so starting to look at these players, you know, starting to look at 2011 as the next realistic chance at contention is a really healthy attitude, and looking at the players on the roster as what are they going to be able to do this team in 2011 starts to shed light on the fact that, yeah, Marcus Trufant might have his value depressed right now, but his value right now is probably still higher than it's going to be in 2011, when he's going to be a 30-something cornerback that probably has his reputation even more weakened, because this is not likely to be a great defense next year. And, you know, and there won't be that environment where teams are going to be so willing to trade, because at that point, free agency should be robust, and teams will be able to sign the cornerback they need. You know, and even if he's not Marcus Trufant good, you get him for money, and money in the NFL is the cheapest resource. Every team has a reasonably close set of money to work with, and you spend it, you know, because you have to. And so you're either getting guys you want, you know, or you're pissing it away on role players. So Marcus Trufant is a really good example of a guy that the team should attempt to move. And he's a finishing player, and he's going to be really attractive to a team like New England, who needs desperate help in their secondary, or a team like New Orleans, who could use a guy who's you know, considered a marquee or near marquee talent, you know, a plug and play player on a team that's already within its window. When Seattle gets back, is they can start going after some of these teams' depth. You know, they can go to some of these cheaper players who they can just start filling the back end of the roster with. Maybe not all of them will turn into anything particularly special, but really getting some of these young players, some of these draft picks that are just a couple years on into their career is a lot like getting the draft pick anyways. A guy doesn't always break out right away. And simply starting to stock the team with good value will allow it to be more aggressive in the draft. It can start taking the highest upside picks with their draft selections, because there isn't the sense that, if this guy doesn't work out, then we're screwed, because we do have significant depth at a lot of different positions. And upside players is really what Seattle should be targeting, because if Ruskell excelled at anything, it was filling out a roster. I mean, Seattle has great depth. It just doesn't have much in the way of marquee talent, especially not on the offense. There's some guys on the defense who are potentially quite good to special. But the offense has John Carlson, Spencer could probably be a Pro Bowl level center. But centers, it's a position that's usually filled in the back end of the draft. It's not as demanding. A center moves in a very small box. You don't have to be the same kind of athlete. It's good to have at the point strength, but even then a center can get an assist from a double team. Center has always been categorized almost like fullback, as far as, a player that every team needs, but you don't usually invest huge resources into. I mean, there's really little reason to think this Seahawks team could have a great offense. What was possible with a healthy Hasselbeck and the kind of depth they had at wide receiver was a good passing offense to complement what looks like a very talented total defense. But, that's just gone now. The team should just start working the phones. After Marcus Trufant, you can go to a guy like Deion Branch. That idea of a slot player with good agility and good hands is very in vogue right now. Deion Branch was Wes Welker before Wes Welker was there, and he'd be attractive to a team that runs a system like that. With Wes Welker just completely blowing out his knee, the truth is that he's probably not going to be able to return in time, to start the season for New England. And we don't know exactly when he'll be back to full strength or what he'll return as. And so New England, who's very much in their window, and even though, Bill Belichick has fallen victim to some of his own arrogance by ignoring the fact that the team probably should be attempting to make another run at the Super Bowl right now and shedding key pieces, thinking that he can fill them with draft picks, I think they feel that they're probably not going to be able to get a guy as good as Welker, just straight off. And so being able to move Branch for any level of draft pick is fine, because right now the contract is really not worth it for Seattle, and he has virtually no future with the team. However, Branch is not a bad player, and I think he proves that from time to time. And, so he just needs to be fit back within a system that asks him to do what he can do. It's kind of ridiculous to see what Knapp tried to do with Branch, where he was more or less their deep threat. I mean, Branch is plenty fast, but he's also a very small guy. I mean, he can be boxed out by just about any DB, and that's a very dangerous throw for a quarterback who barely has any deep ball at all, because Branch isn't going to get huge separation, nor is he going to be able to box out the defender. The defender's going to be able to box him out, and as we've seen, it's like a batted down pass or an interception whenever Branch is sent deep, and it's just not his game. I mean, the guy is a good route runner. He has not great ability over the middle, but nevertheless, he's got great moves. He's a run-after-catch guy. He's got a good mix of agility and speed. He's got, he's a very sure-handed guy who should be picking up first downs, and I think that's where he will be in the twilight of his career. And that's not something I think the Patriots could fill easily otherwise. And Kansas City's in a very similar position. I mean, with the hiring of Charlie Weiss, it would make sense for Weiss to want a guy that he's very familiar and comfortable with. And being able to bring Branch in, and again, it's Kansas City is and this is so frustrating, is much closer to contention than Seattle is, because Kansas City's a bad team that's been investing in the future, whereas Seattle's a bad team that's been burning the future thinking it could do something now. And while Kansas City is a team that it would not be the least bit surprising to see them go 8-8 next year and then enter their window after that. Seattle's nowhere close. And so Branch, someone who can give the team 2-3 years while they try to develop another slot receiver, you know, to help to boost the team back to respectability, you know, and maybe even have a few years of being a good player while the team is a good team, you know, makes a lot of sense for them. Seattle just has to be very realistic about what they get in return. Getting draft picks of any kind is valuable because even if those draft picks are only really burned to move around in the draft for the players you want, that's where Seattle needs to be. It needs to be concentrating on getting young players that are not going to produce now, but are going to produce 2-3 years from now. As they develop, as a team develops, as the situation becomes clear, that's what Seattle needs. That's the kind of talent Seattle needs, and that's not Branch. And that's not T.J. Houshmandzadeh either. And Houshmandzadeh, he wants out, I'm sure. This has been a massive disappointment for him. I imagine the guy is unbelievably frustrated because one of the reasons he signed here was because of his relationship with Matt Hasselbeck, and he's got to know, if no one else knows, that Hasselbeck is really suffering. And I don't think the guy is probably in Hasselbeck's ear. The guy clearly, he's a competitor. He wants to be great. He expects to be great. But I don't think he's really a bad guy. And I don't think he's going out of his way to pick fights and point fingers and be acerbic. I just think that he can't help but bristle at criticism directed at him when it's just so undue. I mean, he is really the same player Seattle signed, and any sort of decline in his performance is really linked to the talent that's surrounding him. But again, while he is not a good prospect for Seattle, he makes sense for teams who are closer, who are nearing or entering their window, or just need to give a player a soft landing. Seattle has developed some sort of relations with Detroit. That probably is gone now because we're completely moving out the staff. But Detroit makes a lot of sense because Detroit has a dynamic deep threat. They've got their Chad Johnson, so to speak. They're probably going to invest into line talent in this draft, and line talent typically is able to produce pretty early within their careers, which is one of the nice things about adding an offensive lineman. They've got their quarterback, and whether Stafford ever does become something great or not, the Jim Schwartz has to assume he will, because it's you just can't, when you've invested the first overall draft pick, you more or less have to assume that guy until he's in the penitentiary dead or Jamarcus Russell. That is what you have to do. You have to have faith. And so the Lions are another team that, they are closer than Seattle, and they have a brighter future than Seattle, and they could pick up one of these spare part players because it'll either help ease the transition, or maybe Hoosh can still be a good possession receiver when that team is entering into its, entering into its prime. And I think Jim Schwartz understands the idea that maybe Hoosh is not a phenomenal, gifted athlete in the sense of being a burner or being a great leaper or anything like that, but the skills he does bring are extremely valuable in the NFL. And in a lot of ways, they're the perfect complement to a guy like Calvin Johnson, who can stretch the field, who can get the safety out of the box, who can tack deep. Then you've got a guy like Hoosh who becomes nearly as deadly underneath because, we're gonna shift coverage over. We're going to make sure Calvin Johnson isn't going to get us over top. But all of a sudden, the team has a new set of downs because there's T.J. Houshmandzadeh getting that 3rd-and-6 completion for 8 yards and, starting that drive all up again. And so he's another valuable resource that Seattle should not be looking to lose just because they don't like him or they feel like he's a bad clubhouse presence or he's too arrogant or whatever the media wants to paint him as. But they should move him because they have to accept that this offense specifically does not need finished players. It does not need complementary players. It needs talent. It needs essential talent. And, wide receiver is one of those positions that can be somewhat difficult to scout. And, there's a whole host of wide receivers who've been able to slip into later rounds because they can fulfill a few basic things even though they don't fit the perfect wide receiver profile. I mean, naturally, it's easy to see that Andre Johnson type because, they're just such remarkable athletes and it really It just pops right off the film when you see the guys. Every single thing they do looks majestic. But, you know, then when you get a guy like Brandon Marshall, who, you know, is not very fast, and so that's going to immediately knock him down, you know, it's harder to see. Or a guy like Steve Smith, who's very small, you know, it's harder to see what they can do. But then what Brandon Marshall can do is he's such a physical presence, he can command almost any point in the field because he just throws around cornerbacks like they're nothing. A guy like Steve Smith, you know, he's such a freakish athlete that despite his stature, you know, he's not only a deep threat, but he's a jump ball threat. I mean, Steve Smith is just someone who defies odds. You know, he's almost a maniacal competitor. He's feisty and desirous and fiery to almost a fault. But, it works in football. I don't know about the guy's personal life, but it works in football, you know. And that's why Seattle, even if they move Hushman's on and they only get like a fourth round pick or something like that, that fourth round pick could potentially turn into something. And Seattle needs to set out the net when it comes to getting young players. You know, they need to see whatever they can get. They need to bring in talent. You know, not all talent that pops off the screen, just talent. Because you never know when you're going to stumble into a guy that's really going to, you know, transcend the stereotype and be a productive player nevertheless, you know, Steve Largent type. And that's where Seattle should be. So there you go. Move Hoosh. Maybe Detroit's the answer. But Hoosh is a generic enough profile that he could go a lot of different places. Mookie suggested moving Hushman's audit to Dallas and maybe getting a guy like Deshaun Choice. And that actually makes a lot of sense because Dallas, much like every playoff team, is probably going to make some kind of run and then lose. And they're going to blame that loss on some specific thing that they're not accomplishing. And given the state of the Cowboys, given that their offensive line's not great, certainly Flozell's going to play a part whenever they lose. One of the things they really lack is just a slot guy. I mean, they're running Creighton out there, and Creighton still looks decent more or less because the surrounding talent, no one covers Creighton. Roy Williams is kind of an oversized possession receiver, but he's not reliable. And a guy like Hushman's auto really would be. But the larger point is that almost any team in the NFL could use a guy like Hushman's on it because he's a generalist. He's the canine of the NFL. You know, put him in a system, they're all going to have some zone buster routes. They're all going to have a need for a guy who can work in the slot, can bully around the nickel back, who's got a good level of athleticism, who's got a nice broad base of skills, and who's a great possession receiver, and is not going to suffer so bad when his speed falters, because Hushman Zada's never been fast. And you could speak of Burleson the same way. Burleson's going to still have some sex appeal above and beyond guys like Branch and Hushman Zada, because every so often Burleson pops off, does something that's really fun to see. However, he's not a very good football player. And sometimes that's a really great combination to move, because coaches will often overestimate their ability to coach up a player. So when they look at a guy like Burleson, they're like, wow, look at this guy's incredible athleticism, but why didn't he finish that route? Instead of saying, maybe this guy is just someone who's like that, maybe this is his profile as a player, they'll want to bring that guy in because they think they'll be able to, you know, hammer that out of him. You know, if this guy does enough laps, you know, or gets benched or loses game check, then all of a sudden he will finish it. Maybe that is true. I don't know. There is the stray example of a player being coached up every so often, but it's so hard to actually differentiate what was just personal development by the player and what the coach actually did. But nevertheless, Burleson's someone that people are going to look at. He's had kind of a breakout year this year. In truth, he really hasn't had that much of a breakout year, because just like every year before, his yardage obfuscates his actual production, because even though he does get yardage, he's targeted on a lot of passes that don't turn into anything. He ends up getting a lot of fourth quarter yardage when the team is just more or less passing to seem respectable when the game is already over. And unfortunately that is Burleson's profile. There's a Freudian slip. But nevertheless, again, he has value on the open market. And because teams are not going to be able to get talents like this any other way, and because the passing game is exploding, and because teams are now wanting to have talent three deep at wide receiver. Seattle could move these guys out. And yes, it'll look like all of a sudden they're bereft of talent at wide receiver position. But if that's the case, then so be it. You know, I mean, again, while you don't ever punt a season, you always go into a season trying to, you know, lay out your best hand. Sometimes you got deuces, you know, and you don't bet the house assuming that you're gonna deuce your way to victory, you know, and so that's okay, you know. Move these guys out, bring in, you know, one of the things that Pete Carroll does do, and Curley pointed this out, it's a great point, is that he's going to have that mainline connection to USC, and this is a USC squad that runs hundreds deep, and some of this talent was never able to break, you know, the starting roster, but nevertheless can come in. Maybe you're going to get some late bloomers on there. These guys are 4- and 5-star prospects, you know, and maybe they were not able to outcompete other 4- and 5-star prospects in the short term, but they're just young men, you know. Not everyone is everything they're going to be at 21, at 22, at 23. So you bring them in. Seattle has time to burn because it doesn't have to be good again. And so it can load its roster with potential when other teams have to load their roster with, you know, pieces that push them towards winning. You know, and that sort of process where Seattle starts figuring out every single potential talent they could move, you know, Matt Hasselbeck, Seneca Wallace, TJ Houshmandzadeh, Deion Branch, Marcus Trufant, maybe Deion Grant, you know, it should be done throughout the entire roster because this is going to be a really active trading season. And Seattle needs to accept that maybe they're not going to get the kind of talent back that is equivalent of what they move, but that talent will have greater value to them, just like the talent they move will have greater value to the team they're moving it to. Because Seattle is nowhere near contention. They're going through their, you know, their third head coach in 3 years. They have no quarterback. They have no prospect at quarterback. They have no chance of really getting a quarterback anytime soon. They're almost certainly going to have to bring in a rookie quarterback who's guaranteed to be awful at first. And they don't have, they can't give him the Matt Ryan soft landing because, you know, I mean, let's face it, you know, everyone was singing Matt Ryan's praises, but part of the reason Matt Ryan looked so good was because Matt Ryan was joining a ready-made offense because that team had been bad for a long time. You know, people think that that Matt Ryan was making the talent around him look better, but the truth is that what was happening was the guys before Matt Ryan was making those guys look worse. And so by putting Matt Ryan in there instead, what, you know, he was really able to hit the ground running. And it, you know, and that's great and everything, but that isn't the way it necessarily has to be done. You know, Matt Ryan hasn't made any major steps this year, and that's because deep down he's just another quarterback prospect. He just happened to be dropped into a really above-average offense that was waiting for a starting signal caller. So Seattle just needs to start accepting that in the short term it's not going to be a good team. It needs to start looking at the players it has that have some kind of value. Unfortunately, Julius Jones probably doesn't have much value, but probably is more valuable to the team than anywhere else. You know, Sean Locklear potentially has some kind of value, though I think that's shaky. But their wide receivers do. Members of their secondary, too. Matt Hasselbeck does. Seneca Wallace does. And they're not a part of the future anymore. Seattle should be big players on the open market. They should be any guy who's 27 or older, or who is expensive, or who is a finished player, they need to be moved out. They need to be moved out, and they need to be used to get the team the talent that will be the talent that will help the team build towards its future. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs are a pretty good model, and while the Chiefs have been bad now for the last couple years, they are becoming better. And while the Matt Castle situation might really screw them over the long term, what they've been doing before that was smart. You know, you don't want to give up a talent like Jared Allen in a sense because you're probably not going to easily replace that talent. But nevertheless, what good would Jared Allen be doing for Kansas City? Would he be getting them that extra win? You know, would he push them to 6 wins or something like that? You know, I mean, there's essentially no gain there. The difference between a 4-win season and a 6-win season is meaningless to fans in an organization. It's meaningless to competitors. It's meaningless to the people who want it, you know, who want something great from their team. So that's my take on the way Seattle should be running its front office. It needs to swallow its pride. It needs to take a really hard look at where it is as a franchise. It needs to build around its young talent, and it needs to give this team some sort of direction, not just bring in faces, bring in distractions, bring in people who seem like progress because they've got a famous face. And I hate to say it, but that looks like what it's doing. And that's ridiculous. And unfortunately, while I was really hopeful when I conceived this idea of attempting to move out a lot of the roster and accepting that this was a rebuilding team and taking advantage of this really unique opportunity that it's going to be a great trading market and the teams are going to, teams that want to improve their roster are going to have to trade because the free agent market is going to be so barren, I'm not sure that's what's going to be done now. I don't know that Pete Carroll can accept that he is shepherding a rebuilding team towards some sort of future. It's really what you'd like to see a young, unestablished coach do, a coach that can be given time because he is instituting his way. And Carroll is a big splash, but what radical changes is he going to make? If Seattle is bad again next year, can Carroll weather that storm? And I doubt it, because people want, when you get a guy like Carroll to come in, that the team is going to suddenly turn things around. And while the simple transition to a 3-4, plus the maturation of the defense, plus hopefully some sort of competent quarterback, is a good foundation for this team, surging back towards something like 7-9, that's probably not the standard that Carroll expects from his first season. The guy has been in college so long, I don't think he knows how to do the losing press conference anymore. He's gonna lose more in his first season as a Seahawks coach than he has in the last 5 years at USC. And that's going to drain the guy. Here's this breezy optimist who I think has that sort of attitude that you do the right things and the right things will happen to you, and that's just, it's not the world. And you have to do your best and know that you don't have any control after that. And I'm not sure that Carroll can do that. He's finishing his career with Seattle, essentially. When his contract is up, there is no future after that. The idea is that you hire Carroll because within his tenure here that he's going to bring glory to this franchise. And there's just practically no way that's going to happen. And so, this move is a real big wrench in the future of this team, and a real frustrating move because it's going to probably block the path back towards contention. At best, I think Carroll will move towards mediocrity on the back of Tim Ruskell's drafts. Tim Ruskell was brought in to fix what Holmgren had done, and he did. He was not maybe a great general manager, but he did some right things, and he's given Seattle something to build off of. And now Carroll's coming in, and I think he's completely unprepared for the task he's going to be undertaking. I think he's completely unprepared for the kind of failure he's going to be undertaking. I think that he's a guy who is a one step away kind of guy. And it feels like a disaster. I don't want to be reactive. I don't want to act like the sky is falling. But it's very difficult for me to see how this can work out. I hate moments like this because it really, in a lot of ways, it spotlights that NFL football owner, NFL team owners, what they're doing is that they're doing a hobby. And then a lot of times they bring in the guy because it's their action figure. Mike Holmgren was an action figure. He was a guy that, isn't it cool for Paul Allen to be able to interact with this guy that he probably was like in awe of, when he signed. And Pete Carroll's the same kind of thing. And it's ridiculous because the goal is not to hire a celebrity. This isn't, some sort of blockbuster movie where you can get Tom Cruise in a part and that's going to guarantee $30 million in revenues. This is really why I love football. I love sports. It's a pure competitive thing. You can pass, you can run, you can block, or you can't. And the better team, the team that better executes, the team that knows how to win better, that knows the better strategies, wins. There is no face value. There is no There's no presence. There's no celebrity. There's none of that stuff that pollutes politics and movies. All the really lower ranker files of humanity. Where things become essentially a war of ad hominem assaults, where people want to cast people as idiots or as fools, as evil or philandering, and ignore what is their actual job. I mean, football, eventually the teams take the field. That is the job. You win, you lose. It doesn't matter who you are. You become a star by winning or losing. You don't be a star, and that makes you win or lose. And so this looks like a major step back. I'm very frustrated because it would have been, Seattle has done a tremendous job of getting contracts that other teams are going to want, to talent that other teams are going to want. Kearney, Hill, Trufant, Grant. These are guys that there's no reason for them to be on the Seattle Seahawks, but they're not bad players. There are players that could move to other teams and help pave the way to what Seattle can become, but I just can't see Seattle doing this kind of stuff under Carroll, and that makes today a really frustrating day. But before I take this podcast onto the path of profanity, swearing, threats, and so forth, well, which feels like it's beginning to bubble up in my stomach as I come to the full realization of the enormity of this fucking disastrous fucking end of the week, this moment that I think I will think about for years to come and go, fuck that, fuck that, fuck that. I'm going to end the podcast and say, this might be a great opportunity squandered. Seattle has absolutely no reason to have to take their team into the ground like they look like they're about to. I'm going to be here no matter what this team does, but I think that we're just going to have to accept that there's going to be a lot of really negative things written about this team coming up, because it seems like they're moving in a really stupid, unproductive way that's going to hurt us all as fans, something we don't deserve. Seahawks fans are some of the most loyal, most cognizant, most open and passionate fans I have ever met, and I've been around, and they populate Quest and they cheer their hearts out no matter how bad this team has been. I think that, if you were to do what Seattle's done the last two seasons in Philadelphia, in Boston, in Baltimore, Cleveland, you would have that that bubbling animosity. You'd have it coming through the press, coming up from the fans, and there's just been a really great sign or show of loyalty and acceptance and understanding that, that sometimes with having a team that was as good as the Seahawks were for most of this last decade comes with the responsibility that one day that team will decline, and there's just almost nothing you can do about it. But once you've gotten to that phase where you can start moving off, shuffling off some of these players that are causing the decline, that team can rebound again. And Seattle has, the ownership has accepted complete denial of that. In a lot of ways, it seems like the team is accepting that they are still what they were 5 years ago, which they're not. The youth is gone. The Hall of Famers are gone. The talent now lies in the defense. Hopefully Carroll can do something with that. I hope for the best. I hope for the best. That's me out. So, you Seahawks, you fucking idiots.